Okay, welcome everyone. This is episode one of the Potato League podcast. I am one of your hosts, Tom Crossman. Sitting across from me is one of my oldest, I guess not by age, but longest known friends.
Duration,
yes, that's good. Dan Fleming.
Hello.
Dan?
How's everyone doing?
Good. What we're going to do, being how this is episode one, we will talk a little bit about what we do, and then we'll move into some news, and then a main topic, and go from there. The idea is to talk about pretty much anything nerdy, games, TV, movies, books, comics, whatever. And whatever interests us, and whatever interests you guys. If anyone, any one of the five or six people listening have something they want to talk about, go ahead and send it in, and we'll do what we can.
We can be persuaded and or bought.
Oh, I'm for sale, absolutely. Yeah. There's no question about that. I wanted to go over our spoiler policy first, because I know that's huge for people. And Dan and I just briefly discussed it.
Rosebud was a sled. Just going to board it out.
We're going to, if it happened this week, like if it's a movie that came out on Friday and we're recording the next day and we saw it, yeah, we'll leave you alone. If it was, you know, the final episode of some show and we're recording 2 days later, sure, we'll leave you alone. If it happened in the last month, we'll just say, hey, you know, skip ahead 5 minutes. You don't want to hear this yet. If it happened any more than that or like a year ago, then tough shit. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah. If you don't know that Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father, why are you even listening?
Right. Honestly? And then, but again, that only applies to you guys. We get a pass. So if there's something that I haven't read or watched or anything like that, I don't give a shit how old it is. I'm not allowed to be spoiled because this is our show and we do what we want. So news, what do you want to start with, Dan? We got three big things that we were going to talk about.
I want to talk about the Crimson Peak trailer first, because that I have been waiting for so very, very long. For those of you who do not know, Crimson Peak is the newest film coming out from Guillermo del Toro. It's his return to horror, and from the look of it, it's a gothic horror. Got a nice little write-up here from IMDb. I'll cite them properly in MLA format. Crimson Peak. In the aftermath of a family tragedy, an aspiring author is torn between her love for her childhood friend and the temptations of a mysterious outsider. Trying to escape the ghosts of her past, she is swept away to a house that breathes, bleeds, and remembers. Yes. I don't know about you. Absolutely, I was blown away.
Yeah,
by the trailer.
I had no idea about it until you posted it yesterday or the day before. Mm-hmm. I watched it, and you know, not even knowing the cast and you know everyone that was revealed, I was like, that was a great choice. It'll be good to see Tom Hiddleston do something other than Loki, because everyone loves him as Loki. Mm-hmm. But I think he's such a good actor that he can do anything.
He's been dynamite in everything I've seen. I don't know if you've seen Jim Jarmusch's new vampire film, Only Lovers Left Alive.
Negative.
Tilda Swinton, so good. They play immortal vampires, as most are. But yeah, him and Tilda Swinton, it's like, hey, super androgyny everywhere. And it was a wonderful film.
Tilda Swinton's good in everything, too.
As I believe Tom Hiddleston is, too. I've never seen him in anything bad. And like you said, he just owns the role of Loki. So it's nice to see him in other things where he isn't... Well, I'd like to say where he isn't going after a blonde god dude, but he does kind of go after Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah.
Which I wouldn't label a god, but, you know. At least he's still picking on blonde people.
We'll cover that. The other cast member that we saw was Jessica Chastain, who's also a very fine actress. Yes. Our concern was Charlie Hunnam, as Dan told me before we started recording. And I agreed totally, because I'll be honest, I thought he was horrible in Pacific Rim.
I was not the biggest fan of him in Pacific Rim either. And like I said, one of my favorite shows, not top five, spoiling my list right there. I love Sons of Anarchy. He is one of my least favorite characters on the show. I know he gets all the girls in
because
he takes off his shirt and he's got sweet man boobs and whatnot, but he's so wooden for me. I've only liked him in Judd Apatow's old show Undeclared.
Yikes.
Where he played kind of a British Lothario, which worked well for him when he was 20, but now Yeah, he worries me in movies.
Yeah, I haven't seen... I have yet to even start watching Sons of Anarchy because I'm an idiot. But, yeah, the way he... And it was kind of everyone in Pacific Rim was kind of wooden, but he, like, went over the top wooden.
Yeah.
Just the dialogue in that movie in general was a little strange, and...
I'm still an apologist for it, though. I love it. I love it. Giant robot people fighting kaiju. Yeah. I'm down for it. I checked my brain at the door, but yeah, there were still parts where I'm like, he's supposed to have this deep symbiotic relationship with this woman, right, who is controlling the other, like, it's like they were almost, sorry for stroke victims, almost like they were each a stroke victim, and they had only one side of the kaiju that they could control. And supposed to have this deep symbiotic relationship with that girl, and I didn't get that at all. I was just like, he's blank.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to see them really... I wanted the Russian bucket one to kind of end up being the weird victor in that one, because I like the Russians. I don't know. It's my love for Ivan Drago.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking Rocky IV. So the other big news this week, to get even nerdier... and this wasn't even really anything announced officially, but Bethesda Softworks, for the first time in their history, is going to be at E3, and they're going to do a presentation. If you don't know what E3 is, once again, why are you listening to this? But E3 is the Electronic Entertainment Expo. It takes place every June.
The E is cubed.
Yes, exactly. See, you get it. It's every year in June. It's always at the Staples Center, Los Angeles. And what it is, basically, it's a press event where your major video game publishers, Sony, Microsoft, EA, Activision, 2K, they all do their presentations. Ubisoft, and you know, to show what we're what's coming out in the next year and what will be coming out, you know, further on down the line, so that the press can start hyping it up and get the hype train going. Nintendo usually sits it out because they're a little different. They like to do their own Nintendo Direct thing. So they haven't done an E3 in years. But Bethesda has never, ever done an E3. And other than Rockstar, those are probably the two biggest that have never done those sorts of things.
Which pretty much are the only games I play are Rockstar and Bethesda games. That's unfortunate.
Well, this is what the internet is thinking, and I tend to agree, is that the reason Bethesda is going to do their first E3 conference, and my bet is they're going to announce Fallout 4, and it's going to come out this year. That's my bold prediction. There is a difference between Bethesda Softworks and Bethesda Game Studio. Bethesda Softworks is a publisher. They own Bethesda Game Studios, and that's who actually makes the games. Other games that Bethesda publishes, your Dooms and... what was the one last year? Dishonored and stuff like that. They all fall under Bethesda Softworks, but they're not made by them. The tent poles of Bethesda are the ones that are made in-house, which are your Fallout games and your Elder Scrolls games. And long story short, the team that worked on Skyrim has been silent for... That game came out in 2011. They probably had maybe a small team working on DLC for a couple months, and everyone else, I'm assuming, started rating on Fallout 4. So that is now... By the time this conference happens, it will be 4 years. And that's... probably enough time for a studio that big to make Fallout, because I don't know if they're going to do a new engine or anything, but they have all the assets in-house, so it's not a stretch to think that, but I'm very, very excited about that. Fallout 3 was probably...
I played it. I enjoyed it. I'm hoping there's something along the lines of a new Elder Scrolls announcement or something, because... I was a late adopter to that game. I got into it about 2 years ago, and let me tell
Skyrim?
You, Skyrim, yes. Yep. Rarely ever does a video game have an effect on me emotionally, but I will tell you right now, the first time I killed a dragon, I was running laps around this apartment. I was so stoked I had just killed a freaking dragon. I learned later in the game, it wasn't that unusual to kill a dragon, but at that time, I felt so... I felt probably the baddest ass I've ever felt in my entire life. I was like, fuck yeah. Took down a dragon by yelling at it and shooting bows and arrows. I was like Legolas, essentially. Just firing arrows while it covered around me.
Yeah, there is going to be another Elder Scrolls. They'll do that until people stop wanting it. So far, they have kind of gone back and forth, except for throwing Fallout New Vegas in there, which wasn't made by Bethesda. They farmed that out to Obsidian, I think. And it was great, because they used all the same assets. But
I love New Vegas. That was the first of the Fallout games I played.
Oh, so you played that before 3?
Yes.
Okay.
I just liked the idea of running around like a post-apocalyptic Las Vegas.
Yes.
I thought that was just a really cool...
Yeah. So those are the big hopes for that Bethesda conference. We'll know more about that in about 5 months. The last piece of news that was huge this week...
Oh, before we jump into that news, I just wanted to mention quick the Hellraiser Scarlet Gospels news that I had. All right, this is just a brief little snippet, because I don't know... that much about it yet, but I am a huge Clive Barker fan. He's written some of the greatest horror books that I've ever read. He's directed and written Hellraiser, Nightbreed, and Lord of Illusions, which is, for me, a really underrated horror film noir hybrid. I just absolutely adore that film. And in it, there's a main character, Harry D'Amore. Those of you who ever watched Quantum Leap, Scott Bakula played the main character. He did a great job with it. He's just like an investigator of the supernatural. Kind of like the prototypical Winchester brothers. Only not quite as hunky. And he wasn't drawing in the CW crowd.
Or long running
back then. But the newest book that Barker is going to release... I have the date here because I was very well prepared. May 19th. The Scarlet Gospels. Where basically the main character, Harry D'Amore, will be investigating Pinhead, the Cenobites from Hellraiser. This is like uber nerdy comic book crossover in a literary sense. Super stoked for it. Also because, and this will show my true book nerdiness here, I need to get the UK cover of this book.
Was that the one that you posted?
Yes, because it's painted by... comic book artist and just all around extraordinarily great artist David Mack. He did the UK edition. If you go to therealcliveBarker.com, you can actually buy a copy of this. It is signed by Barker with a sketch by David Mack in it. I think it runs upwards of like $80 to $100, but I don't, May's gonna be warm. I'm not sure how much I'm gonna have to eat that month, and for someone like me who loves special edition books, I really think I need to get this. Those of you who don't know, David Mack worked on his own book Kabuki, which is just phenomenal. He did work on Daredevil, does covers for Marvel all the time, and is doing the upcoming covers for Dark Horse's Fight Club sequel comic, Fight Club 2, actually written by Chuck Palahniuk, who has lost a lot of credibility with me over the past few books, but I welcome the return of Tyler Durden. It could suck. I don't care. I'm gonna read it, and the covers will at least be really pretty. Yeah, that's all I really had to say about that. They just announced the special edition hardcovers of that, so I needed to mention that because they're pretty.
And just like the Crimson Peak trailer, I knew nothing about this book either, but as soon as Dan posted it on our Facebook page, you know, you're immediately struck by the cover art. And that, let's face it, that's one of my favorite things about anything, about movies, about books, comics. I just love covers.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the stuff inside is a lot. So yeah. I'm the nerd that buys all the variants of every Harley Quinn cover that you can get, and I bought every one of those 3D villain covers from this summer.
But did you buy all 50 of the Star Wars number one variants?
No, I did not.
Dear God, I don't... 50! Our local comic book shop, who loves his variants because they're super rare, dude. He only had like 6 or 7 of them, and only a few were even remotely interesting to me, but no, I stuck with the John Cassidy cover.
Yeah, I had to get a lot of my 3D covers from... I had to order them from Midtown because they just weren't available.
Well, our local comic book shop, Top Shelf Comics, didn't order half of the damn books. So,
but that was a plug to Top Shelf because we love them.
We do. Well, I loathe love. It's a... Whenever they don't have something I want, I hate them. When they have the thing I need, I like them. I'm finicky.
So that leads us right into the Spider-Man news this week.
Oh, yeah.
And this is... It's been talked about for months now. For those of you that don't know, as far as movies are concerned, Marvel does not own the rights to Spider-Man or the X-Men. Or mutants in general, is that the way it goes?
Mutants in general, which is why I believe they're pushing towards the Inhumans.
Yeah.
They're making Inhumans kind of the new mutants.
Yeah.
Because they own them, so. And they don't own the Fantastic Four either.
Right. But the Fox is never going to give up X-Men because they're doing well with it. They've got their Wolverine, obviously. And they've got these last couple movies have been fantastic, so... They're not going to give that up, but the Spider-Man movies, Sony has struggled with, to say the least. I thought Andrew Garfield was a good choice. I prefer a super skinny Spider-Man because that's how he is in the books.
I'm on board with that, too. I love Andrew Garfield. I think he's great in so many things. I think he kind of he's getting an unfair amount of the blame, I think, for, this one didn't make $1 billion worldwide. It must be... Andrew Garfield's fault.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's got nothing to do with the 80th incarnation of the Green fucking Goblin yet again.
And also, I don't know how many times, and I hope they don't do it this time, we don't need another origin story.
Oh, God, no.
I don't want to kill another Uncle Ben. I don't want to have another, oh, my God, I just got bit by something and woke up and I can climb walls and shit, but... I think that Marvel's smart enough not to do that. But the way the deal is actually the interesting part about it. Sony still has full creative control on their solo movies, and they will still produce and finance those. Marvel is basically leasing Spider-Man. His first appearance I guess there's really no way to tell, but the surefire one that he's going to be in is Captain America 3. And he'll most likely make an appearance in the Avengers movie that will probably follow that.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they're in the midst of getting ready to shoot an end scene, after credit scene for Age of Ultron. Honestly, that would make let's be honest, every fanboy is going to be nerding out in their seats anyway during that entire movie.
Right.
If there's an anticipation that the post-credit scene is going to even have a glimpse of Spider-Man, it might not even have to be Peter Parker.
Right.
Just... Oh, look, here's the aftermath of a bunch of destruction. There goes Spider-Man swinging through. People are going to lose their shit.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they're already prepping something like that.
And they have said... I also like my Peter Parker to be in high school. I like my Peter Parker young. Because I think that makes the most interesting story, because I've always said the cool thing about Spider-Man is that... He didn't ask for this. He never wanted to do this, but now that he has this ability, he feels a responsibility or...
A great responsibility.
Yeah, I was trying to stay away from that.
Oh,
but
you can't. I know. It's ingrained.
Yeah. And that's what was always... he was my favorite superhero growing up, and that's why. I guess the younger they are, the more you would identify as a younger person. So they've already said they want Peter Parker and have him back in high school. Now, this has not stopped the internet from screaming that it should be Miles. Now, if you don't know who Miles is, Miles Morales is a kid.
this is super nerd warning because we're getting into alternate universe Spider-Man now.
In this one, Peter Parker dies, correct?
Peter Parker was the... About 15 years ago, they created a comic book called Ultimate Spider-Man, which had a brand new, fresh continuity. There wasn't the 40 years worth of baggage to worry about. It was aimed at getting the new reader. They let a very young, unknown writer at the time, Brian Michael Bendis, write it. He is now pretty much in charge of almost everything super creative in Marvel. He's one of their go-to guys for cartoons. He's You'll see his name credited in a lot of the movies as a special advisor.
Would he be the Geoff Johns of
He would be the Geoff Johns of Marvel, along with a couple others. But yeah, he's one of the Brain Trust. So he wrote Peter Parker in this new Ultimate World, and it was phenomenal. It was a really, really good book. And I think after a while, he just felt like Peter Parker had run his course, and spoiler warning, killed the shit out of him.
Yeah.
He died a heroic death. It was wonderful and all that, but he died. Hence, someone new taking up the mantle in a young Miles Morales.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Miles is like 15.
He's a very young kid.
And the problem I have with this is that, not that he's a young kid, but the you know, as soon as stuff like this happens, the casting rumors start, and the internet wants Donald Glover for Miles Morales, because that apparently is who he was modeled after.
Yeah.
Here's my problem. Donald Glover is 31 years old. He will be 33 years old by the time the first solo Spider-Man comes out. I think Marvel's plans with everyone is at least a decade. Maybe more.
Do you mean Tobey Maguire was not a teenager during this filming of this first Spider-Man?
Correct.
Oh my gosh.
So I think they're trying to get a decade out of pretty much every character. So yeah. I don't know if I want a 40-year-old playing a 15-year-old Miles Morales. So in any event, let's just stop that right there, because it's just not going to happen. And plus, Donald Glover has so many other projects right now. He does a god-awful amount of different projects. I don't know that... I suppose he could make the time if they throw enough money at him, but I don't know. I think he's the type of person that would just say, no, that time is past. Yeah. I don't want to do it.
Is Childish Gambino on tour currently?
I don't know.
I mean, I still miss him desperately on Community. I was very saddened when he left that show. So whatever he's doing now, better be worth his not being on the Community. Abed needs him.
So that, I don't know, if that's probably enough on Spider-Man. The more we know, we'll get back into it when we hear some casting. There were a couple names thrown around. Logan Lerman,
who I think, although he's, I think he's mid-20s, I really like that kid.
He's got a baby face.
I've seen the Percy Jackson films.
Mm-hmm.
He was good in that. I've heard he's phenomenal in Whiplash,
mm-hmm.
which I haven't seen yet, which oddly enough was his co-star J.K. Simmons was J. Jonah Jameson in the original three.
Right.
But the thing that I would want him in this role mainly for the perks of being a wallflower.
Yeah.
Where he just played an absolute outsider of a kid who latched onto the few friends he had and did what he had to do to be who he was. And he was really, really good in that movie.
And
no more Green Goblin in the next Spider-Man.
Yeah,
I'm done.
Yeah.
No more Green Goblin.
Yeah.
Spidey has one of the most, other than Batman, I think he's got the second best rogues gallery.
Yeah.
There's so many good people that he could.
Flash is pretty strong. But yeah, Spider-Man is. Yeah.
I know Sony wants to go forward with the Sinister Six film or whatever.
Yeah, and that's still going to happen.
Which, I don't know. I like Spider-Man's villains, but how are you going to focus a movie around them? Is it going to be like fucking Ocean's 14?
Yeah.
Only with the Shocker and the George Clooney role? I mean,
yeah.
What's that movie going to be about?
Now,
they're smart enough to hire good people to run these movies, so.
And that's, the thing that Sony's really getting out of this deal is Kevin Feige. Kevin Feige is going to be in on how the movies are shaped. He's going to get executive producer credit on the Sony-financed movies, but he's not going to get paid in any way. So, but they don't care, because they just want the character. Sony's not stupid. They see how much Avengers and Cap and all those movies make. So they want a little bit of that magic. Hey, come invent our character, reinvent our character for us, and we'll let you borrow him. That's basically what the deal is. But what you were just talking about with... what were you just talking about?
Sinister Six film.
Sinister Six. On the other hand, and we'll talk about this later for sure, I have no doubt that the Suicide Squad movie will be awesome.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there is a way to do that, and I guarantee you that movie was greenlit the second some bigwig watched the Arkham movie that came out a couple months ago. the animated one, and that was fantastic. I've watched it, I don't know, 4 or 5 times, and it's a great movie. I think if Harley Quinn is not huge now, she's going to be everywhere by then. And Harley is, she's my favorite, I'll admit.
She'll be the breakout character of that movie, without a doubt.
Absolutely. But right now, you see her, you know, I see her a lot of places because I'm a nerd and I look at nerdy things and, you know, you see her at Hot Topic. But I'm thinking about the time that movie comes out, she's going to be plastered everywhere.
Yeah.
So anyway.
And I just looked this up because I blanked out on who is actually in charge of the Sinister Six movie. It's Drew Goddard, which he's only got one directing credit to his name, but it was the amazing Cabin in the Woods, which I loved to no end. But he also wrote, he's pretty much been one of Joss Whedon's right-hand people. He's written for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, for Angel.
That's where I recognize.
He wrote for Alias, he wrote for Lost, he wrote Cloverfield, also co-wrote Cabin in the Woods, was one of, like, the 17,000 people involved in writing World War Z. He was one of those people.
We'll have to talk about that someday.
Oh, definitely. And he also has been involved in the Daredevil series. I think he was the original showrunner and wrote the first episode, but then left to direct the Sinister Six.
Gotcha.
So he had an involvement in the initial genesis of the Daredevil Netflix show.
Which we'll also talk about later.
Oh, yes.
Are we fair to move into our main topic?
Oh, I'm excited to move into the main topic.
Okay, here's the thing about our main topic. This whole thing started, or this topic started, I don't remember if it was before we decided to do the podcast or after. I posted something on Facebook that had my top five.
I think that might have been it.
Was that pre podcast
idea? I believe
it
was the pre-podcast idea.
I think that was the one that jump-started, though, because Dan, I just kind of, for whatever reason, posted my top five TV shows on Facebook a couple weeks ago, and Dan mentioned, because usually our interests align pretty...
Mm-hmm. They always have.
Yeah, and they always have. But in this one, he said, the interesting thing about your list is that we only share one out of the top five. And do we want to talk about that one first or last?
Oh, we could talk about it first, I guess. I mean, because I like making lists in order, listed mine in five down to one. This one is rather high on the list, but I don't mind talking about it right away. And I'm also going to like to mention, I can't remember for the life of me what your top five was. Good. Yay for advancing age, because this is all going to be a complete
surprise. It's going to be a surprise.
Yeah, it's a brand new list to me. As you get through probably 4 of the 5, then it'll be like, oh yeah, now I remember. But yeah, no, we can talk about our shared one first.
The shared one is Breaking Bad, which a couple interesting things for me. Well, first of all, it just ended, so it's a perfect time to talk about it. Well, just ended.
It's a perfect time to talk about it because of the prequel Better Call Saul airing now on AMC.
That neither one of us have seen yet.
That we haven't seen yet. It's on my computer. I just haven't watched it.
It's free somewhere. It's free. The first two episodes are free on something. I saw it. I might have seen it on my Xbox the other night. Doesn't matter. Anyway, for me, Breaking Bad, I've been this type of person for a while. For anyone that doesn't know, my wife and I cut the cord with cable and satellite on January 1st of 2012. So we've been Netflix and Hulu for 3 years now.
And I haven't had internet, period, at my apartment. We're recording this in my apartment, and if you were to look around, you would see vast amounts of DVDs and Blu-rays because, damn it, I want to watch stuff when I want to watch it. And Netflix has the habit, I will never forgive them for taking down the show Party Down when I still had 4 episodes to go. That was like the end of it for me. That was like 6 or 7 years ago. I'm like, screw it, I'm done.
That's kind of funny.
I'm just going to buy the stuff I want. Food will come later.
So I actually didn't even start watching Breaking Bad until, I want to say the last, not this most recent summer, but last summer, the summer of 13. So I watched all 5 seasons in a span of, I don't know, maybe 4 months. Because I knew I wanted to watch it all, and I knew I wanted to watch it all kind of in a short period of time. So when I knew that the second half of season 5 is going to hit Netflix in the fall, I figured it was safe to start in the summer. And I don't know what more you can say about that show that hasn't been said already.
I started watching it when the first season hit DVD, and the whole reason I started watching this was because those of us who know Tom and I know we had the greatest chemistry teacher in the history of the world, Virgil Valente.
Yeah.
And the idea of a high school chemistry teacher finding out he's got cancer and deciding, I'm going to cook meth to provide for my family. I don't know about you, but Virgil could knock the shit out of a batch of meth, I bet.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That I think back to his closet that he had with all these bottles of chemicals.
Yeah.
That sometimes didn't even have labels, just some sort of ancient Hebrew.
Yeah.
Because they were so old, and I was like...
And the whole room had a certain smell that...
Yeah. I could picture Virgil cooking up meth. I mean, the dude blew his own fingers off with chicken... chicken shit, basically. So you know he likes to experiment with stuff. And so
it's such a... for one thing, it's sort of... It's a realistic premise. It's also... Totally original. I don't think there's ever been a show that started out as strong as that one did with a premise as interesting as that. There's no way anyone watches the first episode of Breaking Bad and then just says, nah, fuck it, I'm not going to watch it anymore.
Yeah. So many shows, especially in their first season, they take a while to find themselves.
Yes.
I mean, I find that especially with stuff like comedies. Stuff like The Office and Parks and Rec. They take a year to kind of gestate and figure out who their characters were.
You are pretty much... regurgitating exactly what my wife says, because she says I give up on shows too easily. Mm-hmm. If I don't like the first three or four episodes, I'm out. Yeah. And then she will keep watching, and she lets me know when it starts to get good.
Yeah, but with Breaking Bad, you could see that and say, there's an artist. There's numerous artists at work on this show, from Vince Gilligan. This was his baby. He wrote a lot of the shows. He was a showrunner. He was the director of many shows, the executive producer of a ton of them. The cinematographer, whose name I'm blanking on at the moment, but I heard this interesting story that he every once in a while will go into a Best Buy. And once he went into a Best Buy and they were showing an episode of Breaking Bad on one of their TVs, and he scolded the employees because their colors were off. And it basically turned into, do you know how fucking long it takes me to light this show?
Yeah, that's...
Please have your colors right before you go projecting this stuff on a 60-foot television.
Well, they do that... That's a department store trick that they do. Your TV's never going to look like that. But yeah, that's the great thing about that show was the lighting was always terrific. The camera was always exactly where it needed to be or where it should be.
And often not in the place you would expect.
Right.
I know they used a lot of, from underneath glass surface shots a lot.
Yes. Or up out of water.
Very, very high angle shots.
Yeah.
And...
a lot of looking straight down.
Mm-hmm.
And then the use of color. I don't know if you know this. I saw this. This might be a good little tidbit. I saw this recently. One of my buddies, actually it was his wife that posted it. Brent Morton. His wife posted this list of things you may not know about Breaking Bad. And usually I don't click on those lists, but I had to know.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were just kind of coincidence type things. But
I usually find myself knowing most of those things. Things you never knew. And I'm like, yeah, no, I did.
Well, the interesting thing is someone made a color graph of Walt's clothes from episode one to the finale. And if you look at them all in a row, it just gets progressively darker.
Yeah, whenever the Heisenberg,
appears...
That's when it gets all black.
It was fascinating because you look at the... I mean, there are little blips in there.
And the guy did it for, like, five of the main characters, if I remember right. I don't know if you saw that. Yeah. Because I remember Skyler's sister, whose name I'm blanking on right now.
Marie
was pretty much purple the entire fucking time.
Yeah.
But, Hank's clothes changed. Walt Jr.'s clothes changed. Everybody's clothes changed depending on where... the show was going at that moment.
Yeah.
And it's freaking genius.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff in there. The plane crash, which was season two? Season one?
The one that was I think that was two. The one that was foreshadowed with the bear in the pool.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was also foreshadowed by the titles of the episodes. Now I'm blanking on what it said, but it was something like...
It gave away a clue.
Yeah.
And that episode right there sums up what I love about the show a lot, because...
What it was. 737 down over Albuquerque. That's what it was.
Yeah. That bear They showed that fucking bear in the pool.
Yeah.
Every other episode.
Yeah.
Just like a shot. And you never knew. It was like some sort of weird little art house tone poem in the middle
and
of
every,
the show.
And every time the bear appeared, that episode had, the title of that episode was leading to your hint. So the first time the bear appeared, it was the episode 737, which had nothing to do with an airplane. It was the amount of money Walt figured out that he needed.
Yep.
And then there was the next time you saw the bear, it was down. The next time you saw the bear, it was over. And the next time you saw the bear, it was Albuquerque.
I mean, just total little geek things.
Yeah.
And that you make have people to, like us freak out and think, like, oh my God, they're geniuses.
The other thing for me was, you know, people talk about season five and Walt's complete downward spiral. I'm of the opinion that I thought Jesse was more important in season five than Walt was. And I don't know if I'm alone on that.
No, I agree.
Okay. I thought that was Jesse's story, especially at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the showrunners did too. And I don't know how many people really feel that way because, you know, of course, Walt, spoiler alert, Walt dies. You pretty much knew that from episode one.
He dies going back to rescue Jesse.
Yeah.
Something he had no reason to do. I mean,
right at that point, he didn't need to do that.
He was holed up in New Hampshire, which I can understand probably would suck to be holed up in this remote cabin every once in a while getting. Although, if Robert Forster's bringing me supplies, I'm pretty stoked. I'm okay with that. We'll talk about Jackie Brown and stuff.
Yeah.
But Walt didn't have to return.
Right.
I mean, to say he returned, you could say, oh, he returned to see his family. He really didn't. He Flynn really was like, you know, fuck off, go away, Dad.
Right.
Why don't you just die already?
Skylar
was scared shitless. I mean, you did get the nice little moment where he eventually admitted, I did it for me.
Yeah.
I was good at this. I enjoyed it for once. This powerless man was feared.
Right. Well, my favorite scene of the entire series is, and I'm going to mess this up shortly, but it's the one of the first times he and Skylar really talk about it. They're in the bedroom, and you know, she's afraid for her life, and she's feared, and he turns and looks at her and says something along the lines of, who do you think you're talking to?
Yeah.
I'm the one who knocks.
Yeah, because they had just killed his other cook.
Right.
He had convinced Jesse to kill him, which was just masterful, by the way.
What was that kid's name? Now I forget.
And he was just, poor guy. And he was just like, no, she's like, who's going to knock on our door late at night? And he's like, no, Skylar, I'm the one who knocks. Yeah. They fear me. And yeah, the look on her face at that point was just awesome.
That was probably my favorite moment of the entire series. But the funny thing about that show is I can't pick out a favorite show. I think the closest I can come is one of the early ones when they go out to the desert in the Winnebago and Jesse leaves the keys in the ignition.
Oh, that was such a great episode.
Yeah. And that was also, there was foreshadowing in that also because Walt, when he's building the battery, Jesse says something along the lines, "What are you building us a robot to save us?"
And he could have.
And the funny thing is, at the end, the very end, when he does save Jesse in the end of season five, it kind of is a robot because he's got he's got the automatic machine gun that pops up
to a fucking transformer, basically. Yeah.
And so in the end, a robot kind of does save them, a robot that Walt built. But I don't know how much more you can say about that show.
Well, I mean, we haven't even mentioned just the genius that is Bryan Cranston on that show.
Yeah, I mean,
here's Malcolm in the Middle turning into fucking Scarface,
yeah.
And it was so believable and so easy. And this is odd to say, but it's weird how often overlooked Jesse was on this show. I mean, he won like 3, I think, Emmys.
Yeah,
for that role.
Yeah.
But yet no one ever, it's always, oh my God, Bryan Cranston's so amazing.
And
it's
rightfully
like,
no,
Aaron Paul is freaking amazing on that.
I think,
there's a reason, science bitch is a meme on the internet.
And as far as just straight up acting, I think Aaron Paul was asked to do way more in season 5 than Walt was. All Walt had to do was kind of keep the status quo, keep doing what he was doing. Jesse had to basically fall apart.
Break down as a human,
Yeah, and that's not easy to do, convincingly.
Those scenes of him walking around cooking while chained.
Yeah.
And it's just like, God, he's a kicked dog.
Yeah.
He's been beaten down.
Those scenes are hard to watch. And then the very last scene of him driving away is just fantastic. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm going to stop there before.
Yeah, I mean, we could go on and on and on about, Mike and Saul and fucking Giancarlo Esposito as, Gus the Chicken Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tuco from season one.
Yeah.
There's so many amazing people doing amazing work in that show that I'm actually surprised it was only my number two.
Well, I know, and I don't know if I mentioned this. Did I mention this at the beginning that I don't? That I'm guessing yours?
Oh, yeah. We might as well just throw that out there now. Yeah. So go ahead, guess my top five. You know two.
I know Breaking Bad, obviously, because that's the one he said we shared. I know The Wire, because I just know that that's his favorite show ever. So I've got three to guess.
Mm-hmm. One of these, I'll be very surprised if you guess, because this is the one that always people are just like, whoa. So,
oh, now I'm scared. Okay, and all three of these are kind of going out on a limb. Is one of them Sopranos?
Surprisingly, no. Sopranos is one of... I wrote a little just miss category. Sopranos is fucking wonderful. There's no reason why it shouldn't be in my top five, with the exception of season 6, part 1, the Tony Dream season, which I hated. I loathed that so bad. I rewatched season 6, part 1 once, and then have never watched it again. I don't even own that. And I'm a stickler for owning everything that I love.
I can vouch for that.
I skipped season 6, part 1. Maybe I'll buy the complete Blu-ray at some point. But, yeah, I have no desire to rewatch that. It almost soured me on the entire show.
All right, so now I'm frightened. You said out of these three, only one of them was a network show?
Yes.
Okay, so I have sort of two guesses. I'm going to sort of cheat.
And it's not a traditional network. It's not one of the big three.
Oh, no. Are there any from the big three?
No. No, there isn't. Oh, wait. Oh, yes. One is from the big three. I take that back. One is from the big three.
Is it Lost?
It is Lost. Yes.
Thank God. My other one, and this is a... See, I was going to put Twin Peaks in there, but when you said only one was from the big three, I knew that couldn't be it. My last guess...
Also another... Just miss.
Yeah. My last guess, and this is completely out of left field. I'm just going to guess it because it happened recently, and it was a wonderful show, The Shield.
Yes.
Did I get it?
You did. All right. Well, this is a good lead-in as any to my... I'll start off with my top five, because I rank them in descending order. I like doing that type of stuff. My number five is Lost. This is probably the one that gets a lot of, are you fucking kidding me?
Well, it's because the show was so up and down.
Yeah.
It had a wonderful first season. Even the second season was good. It kind of went off the rails for a while.
Yeah, second season had some tough moments.
I thought it came back really strong, though.
But the knock on Lost is the final episode.
Yeah.
So many people are like, you didn't answer every question. And to that, I didn't care.
Yeah, I didn't
By
either.
That point, you still never find out exactly how a polar bear... got on that island. Yeah, there's a research place in there. They probably put it on a boat. Whatever.
Yeah.
The hatch is never completely explained. And I know Damon Lindelof gets a lot of knocks on this for throwing a lot of ideas out there and never following them all out. But at that point, I just didn't care. I was watching the show for the characters.
Right. Yeah. And
you've got Jorge Garcia's Hurley. Yeah. One of the greatest characters on TV ever. Him finding the VW bus on the island is one of the greatest episodes of all time, and him eventually rescuing people with that.
I think Locke is one of the all-time great characters. And then you've got Matthew Fox kind of centers the whole show,
which oddly enough was if I remember reading correctly, was originally going to be Michael Keaton. They had approached him for it, and he didn't want to do it because they were originally going to kill his character
in the first episode. Yeah.
And then after Matt Fox gave a really good performance, they're like, no, let's keep him.
Yeah.
So those, I mean, it's the George Lucas rule. Directors and producers will always say, oh, we had this in the works from the entire way. I'm calling bullshit on that.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much about Lost, I think they just kind of made up on the spot.
Yeah.
They had a writer's room. There's eight different heads going in eight different directions, kind of coalescing, but then getting replaced from season to season.
And where were they... season-wise, when the writer's strike hit? Because that
three.
was... Because that was a rough period.
Season 3 was when the writer's strike hit, but that's also when... And this is one of the things that I bring out on this. This was one of the things when they said, hey, we can make a show 13... We can make a show 13 episodes.
Which is almost the standard now.
Yeah, networks did not do that at that time. Networks, you had a 22 to 24 episode order, and that's what you did.
Right.
Thinking about it now, whenever I watch something like Supernatural, I get halfway through the season, I'm like, this is still going on?
Yeah.
Holy Arrow, cow. Same way. Arrow, same way. Lost started to dictate. And not only that, this is one of the other things they did. Our show's going to end.
Yeah.
They negotiated an end with a network.
Yeah.
And most shows, especially network, prior to this, just went on until they died.
Yeah, go until they canceled.
No one cared anymore, or the lead actors, X-Files, kind of walked away for a while.
Right.
If X-Files had been a 5-season show, this would be on my list.
Yeah.
But dear God, there were episodes of that just went off the rails for me.
So that's a good lead into me. Anyone who knows me knows that I love X-Files right to death. I could probably quote something from every episode if I really thought about it. Clearly, that is a show that took a while to find itself, not necessarily in the stories, but in the characters. In the beginning, Mulder was a little more...
spooky.
Goofy. He was kind of a goof, and Scully, frankly, was a pain in the ass early on. But they both kind of... came around after, I would say, midway through season one. And the way that they blended your standalone Monster of the Week episode with an overarching...
Mythology
that took you as many years into the future as you wanted to go, I think was the genius of that show. And like you said, it did... I actually originally dropped off when David Duchovny left, sort of left. Mm-hmm. But a couple of years ago, I went back and watched those, I think it's 2 seasons, right? Maybe even 3.
That he wasn't around. I think it was...
Or a season and a half, yeah, or some weird
thing. I mean, he showed up again.
Yeah.
Spotty towards the end of the run.
That's
all stuff I've watched. Once he left, I started... I'm spotty on that. I've watched half of the episodes, maybe, and even then, once.
I was actually, I actually enjoyed it. I was mad when it actually happened, but going back and watching, I think they did the whole run on Sci-Fi Channel, 5 or 6 years ago, and I watched all of those, and they weren't that bad. Again, I wasn't happy with the finale. I haven't really been happy with either movie.
Mm. Oh, God, not especially the second one. Oh.
Yeah.
Hey, let's make Saw an X-Files movie, kind of thing, and let's put Billy Connolly in it.
Yeah, I think they had a good idea, which was, instead of doing the whole, covering the mythos, which you really can't do in one movie if what has happened over the course of 200 episodes of TV, but if they just did a 2-hour Monster of the Week type story, they just picked the wrong one.
Yeah. I enjoyed the first movie. It served as a really good branch between seasons.
Yes, it did.
I would have loved to have seen that almost... I mean, I'm sure schedule-wise it would have been a freaking nightmare, but I would have loved to have seen a 2-hour movie in between each season.
Yeah, yeah.
You run the season from the fall to the spring, tentpole movie in the summer, it would have been awesome.
Yep.
Sadly, they didn't do that. Why does Chris Carter not listen to me?
The best part of Fight the Future is the very first scene. Mm. That whole scene is awesome. But the exciting thing about X-Files, it's the oldest show, I think, on either one of our lists. And it is possibly returning.
Yes, it is. And I'm not sure, I mean, you're a comic book fan. Have you been checking out the comic books?
No.
They're doing season 10 as a comic, and it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying it. I didn't maybe enjoy so much the crossover with the Ghostbusters and the Crow.
Yikes.
And one of the other properties that IDW owns. Ghostbusters, the Crow, oh, the Lone Gunman, they're in it. They had a little mini-series too. It's a good comic. It's nothing earth-shattering that's gonna you're gonna put on your shelf in a $100 hardcover next to Watchmen,
right?
But it's enjoyable and it continues on the characters for me, which I like. And it's Duchovny and Gillian Anderson's character.
And I need Gillian Anderson.
Yeah,
in my X-Files.
Yeah.
So the possible return is, you need three principals for that, and you need all three of them, or it doesn't happen. You need Chris Carter, you need David Duchovny, you need Gillian Anderson. Mm-hmm. They're all on board. So I'm sure this will happen in some way. It's just going to be a matter of how it's presented and how many episodes.
And I don't know if you knew this, but Vince Gilligan got his start
yes. On
the X-Files.
Yes.
So let's bring him back for yeah. An episode or two. Just yeah. Saying.
And Darren Morgan would be another one to bring back. He wrote some of the best, like I've been saying, Monster of the Week type ones. Yeah. I think he was actually the man in the costume for the Fluke episode.
Oh, Fluke Man was so good.
Yeah.
Fluke Man and Tombs. Those are two of my yeah. favorite creatures in the whole world. Tombs. Yeah. That guy might be weird. The guy who played Tombs, because apparently he marries like 15-year-olds.
Yes, that's right. That's
and he's right. incredibly creepy, but wow, it works now in Tombs. Cause,
right.
Yeah, he's right. kind of a monster in real life. I hope he doesn't sue me for libel, because I'm sure he's listening.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be a day one subscriber.
Is it libel on a podcast? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Or is it slander?
I think it's slander, but I don't know that stuff.
Yeah.
I have to go to journalism
school. Guy who played Tombs, please don't sue me.
Yeah.
All I have is your DVDs.
Here is my wish for X-Files, and I'm going to kind of give away one of my other favorite shows by doing it. I want them to do the show in the same format that Sherlock does, which is basically 3 movies a year. Mm,
that would be really which good.
A lot of people don't like that's their gripe with Sherlock, but to me, I love it. I'm a little sad that let's be frank. Those guys are both superstars. They both have people are throwing movie roles at them, so scheduling is a problem. So we're probably not going to get another season. We won't see another season this year, and hopefully that'll start up again next year. But we'll talk about Sherlock in a minute. Dan, what's your next one?
My next one. This is the one that most people just look at me really, really funny when they get this. It's the Gilmore Girls. Yes. I absolutely adore the Gilmore Girls. I will defend that show till my dying day. It's weird if you look at my shelf and you see all these crime dramas and sci-fi nerd, and then you're like, did an ex-girlfriend leave these behind or something? But no, it's all me. I love the Gilmore Girls. For me, the creator, one of the main writers, Amy Sherman-Palladino, is one of the wittiest freaking writers on TV. She can throw more references and literary allusions into an episode more than, like, Dennis Miller coked up back in the 80s. Okay, second person to sue us this episode. I don't know if Dennis Miller did coke in the 80s, but anyone who was a fan of his...
I think we do.
Anyone who was a fan of his in the 80s knew he threw out references like nobody's business.
Yeah. Sometimes to his detriment.
Sometimes to his detriment. Gilmore Girls does this as well, but for me, it's just always, hey, I'm smart. I know what they're talking about. Yeah. When they'll make a Clash reference, followed by a Harlan Ellison reference, followed by Godfather reference, just bam, 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 and they don't really call attention to them. They're kind of dropped.
Yeah. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you just pass over it.
Yeah, you just pass over it, but it's very Sorkin-esque in the dialogue. It's fast-paced. It just comes at you. It tells a story. If you're lagging behind, sorry, they're not going to stop and explain stuff to you. Yeah, there's some special heartfelt episodes in there that...
A very special episode.
They're treacly sweet, but whatever, I don't care. I want to marry Lorelai Gilmore, the elder, not Rory. I've had a thing for Lauren Graham since I watched that episode when she appeared on Bad Santa. Yeah. I'm just going to leave that one alone.
Yeah, let's leave that one alone.
That one's for a therapist right there.
Yeah.
But it was just full of quirky characters. I mean, there was this character named Kirk, who I think over the course of the entire show run had about 150 jobs. And he is actually played by Sean Gunn, who is James Gunn, Guardian of the Galaxy's director's brother. Just one of those cool little things, yeah.
Never would have known that. Never would have cared.
Yeah. It's a quirky show in a quirky town with quirky characters. For some, it might be a little too much for me. It may just write. And Stars Hollow is the type of place I wish Milo had been. But sadly, not everyone was nearly as clever.
Now, the woman who, I suppose, created and wrote, what is she doing now?
I honestly don't know. She left...
She just living off that sweet, sweet Gilmore Girls money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the Luke's Diner merchandise that she cashes in on, hell yes.
A lot of backwards blue hats.
I know she did the show called Bunheads for Disney Family or something. It was about ballet. I never watched it. A couple of the actors were on that. Most of the characters have gone on to other stuff. I really don't know what Amy Sherman-Palladino is doing now. She wrote Gilmore Girls. She can rest on those laurels forever, as far as I care.
Well, Lorelai just wrapped up an excruciating run on Parenthood, which my wife watched, and I cannot fucking stand. That show drives me fucking batty because they talk over each other constantly. That's all I'll say about Parenthood.
I watched the first season of Parenthood. I enjoyed it. Even it had has Peter Krause,
yep,
who I loved in 6 Feet Under and Sports Night,
yep,
but
which was criminally canceled too early.
Yeah, that's another show we need to do, shows that were canceled before their time.
Yeah, and that seems to be a Sorkin thing, because yeah, the Sunset Strip one, that was good too.
I enjoyed
it. And that only lasted a season.
But I stopped watching Parenthood, as much as I like Craig T. Nelson, thanks to my Poltergeist love.
Spoiler, she dies.
But I could not watch Parenthood very long because of Dax Shepard.
Yeah.
I hate Dax Shepard, and to me it's unfair that he gets to impregnate Veronica Mars.
Well, I was just going to say, the only good thing about Dax Shepard is that he's married to Veronica Mars, which is another show that is probably in my top 10, but
yeah, it's another of my just misses.
That's such an awesome show. Such an awesome show. And the movie, did you watch the movie?
Oh, I was a Kickstarter supporter of it. I have my Kickstarter exclusive t-shirt.
Awesome.
And I wear it with pride.
It had already been funded by the time I had looked at the Kickstarter stuff, so I just, what the hell, I just waited for it to come out. I did, however, buy it, so I feel like I've contributed in some way. The movie was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to bring all of them back a decade later?
Mm-hmm.
Was it a full 10 years between the last episode?
I think it was a full 10 years, because that was the reason for their reunion episode,
right,
the high school reunion.
Yep.
Yeah.
Everything that they needed to do in the movie, they did. God, I love that.
Yeah.
And that whole series, it's one of those series that when it was over, I was kind of depressed.
I really was too. It was a show that I remember hearing about because Joss Whedon had championed it at the time. And the creator of that show, Rob Thomas, not from Matchbox 20.
Not the guy that sucked after he got married.
He got married? I didn't know. I like Rob Thomas. I think he's another criminally underrated creator. He's doing iZombie, which is a Vertigo comic book coming up. He's the producer, writer on that show. But he also did Veronica Mars and the little scene show Cupid with Jeremy Piven. Way back in the day.
Huh.
I think that was the one he did. I'm IMDb-ing it right now. Nope, take it back. Bobby Carnaval, who I like as well.
Huh.
But he also did the aforementioned Party Down, which I really like. So, it was Cupid. They remade that for a while. Yeah, Cupid with Jeremy Piven was remade with Bobby Carnaval.
Weird. So yeah, that's
my top. That's my number four. Gilmore Girls.
Yeah. Okay, so my next one, I'll go. We already talked about Sherlock, so I'll do that now. I just think that show's brilliant. Just from every aspect, the writing is, I would say, second to none as far as dialogue is concerned, and the two leads are, to me, the best combo in television in a long time. And I would even, in a weird sort of way, put them above Walt and Jesse, just because the interplay between the two is so tight, I guess. I don't even know how else to put it. And of course, we adore Benedict Cumberbatch.
It's odd to think of before this, he wasn't known across the pond.
Right.
As they say, no one had heard of it was, other than having the most amazing British-sounding name of all time.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of him. I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah, you were
never, my God, he's amazing.
You were never thinking that this guy was, like, from Little Italy or anything.
Yeah, I mean, Martin Freeman I'd seen from The Office, the original.
Sure,
but he didn't really do much in between as far... I'm sure over there he was on some BBC show, but over here, I hadn't heard of anything from him.
Right.
Between The Office
we saw him... I think we saw him in a few movies, maybe. He was certainly more recognizable because of The Office. But Sherlock, and even down to Sherlock's brother, Mycroft, which is actually one of the showrunners. I didn't know that.
I did not either.
I didn't know that until very recently. Because he had an idea of what Mycroft could be, and they brought in all these people. And he said, no, you've got to do it like this. And then they just said, fuck it, why don't you do it? So he did. And I think Mycroft is one of the better characters on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But the knock that people put on Sherlock is that there aren't that many episodes. And like I said with X-Files, I don't really have a problem with that because I've said it several times to people or on social media that I think that the season finale of season 2, which is now the name of the episode's blanking on me, is one of the single greatest episodes of television that I've ever watched. The first time my wife and I watched it, usually we're kind of doing other things while we're watching TV and sort of paying attention and talking and whatever, but we both sat there, didn't say a word
The Reichenbach fall.
Yes. For the whole 90 minutes, you know, we didn't say a word, and then it's over, and we were just blown away. So if you have not seen Sherlock at all, it's not going to take you long to get through the whole series. There's only 9 episodes total right now. But like I said, they're all an hour and a half long, roughly. And they're just... There isn't a weak episode in there.
Yeah, I rarely ever pay attention to IMDb star ratings for this stuff. Normally they're far off, but... Just in season 2 alone, like, A Scandal in Belgravia had a 9.5 rating.
Yeah.
And The Reichenbach Fall had a 9.6. That's unheard of, because, I mean, let's face it, IMDb is full of trolls.
Yes.
Who will give one amazing stuff 1 star just so they can bring it down.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, everything's above an 8 on this show. And I agree. I remember catching the first episode of that. I might have illegally downloaded it because someone told me it was really good.
Sure.
But I was just stunned because I really enjoyed how they were able to bring modern technology into it without going, hey, look, this is modern technology.
Yeah, without jamming it down your throat.
That first episode when Sherlock is running around with his phone.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this is fucking phenomenal. This is how you do it. I mean, yeah, some people would say, well, they're kind of drawing attention to it when you see their text pop up on the screen. But it's still, that's how people communicate. That's how people nowadays. Communicate,
yeah.
And it wasn't just like, oh, look, Sherlock in the modern era. It's like,
right. He's
a real person.
Yeah, there's a million ways that that could have gone wrong. Yeah. And maybe there are more than one way to get it right, but they nailed it.
There might be. I've never seen Elementary with Johnny Lee Miller. I've heard it's okay.
Yeah.
I've never heard it. I mean, it had the misfortune of coming out on the heels of Sherlock.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Sherlock was a near miss for me as well. It's such a good show.
And it's also, I don't think I'll ever watch Elementary because for me, probably for the rest of my life, Benedict Cumberbatch is Sherlock to me. Yeah. And that's all there is to it. Again, that format is what I'd like to see for X-Files is, because that will fit everyone's schedule. I think they can do the most with story. It's so much easier when you don't have to fit it into 44 minutes. Mm. I wouldn't be surprised, if Netflix tried to make some deal with Fox. I'm sure Fox still owns the name. I don't know how that'll work, but I'm excited for it. I'm excited for another season of Sherlock. Another friend of ours had posted, when I had posted that, Josh Gatcom, I don't know if you saw, he posted underneath it, that he's like mad at that show because it's not on enough and like there's going to be nothing this year, so he's kind of pissed at it. And to me, it's like, it's more exciting because... You know it is coming. You just don't know when.
I'm thankful because it gives me the chance to catch up on every other show I'm terribly behind on. I mean, we were talking about this before when we started recording. This is really another golden age of television where there's just so many options, especially now that you're seeing, like, Netflix become a player. Amazon's...
A real player.
Yeah, Netflix is kicking some serious ass with their stuff. Hulu's getting their own show programming. Isn't, like, Community coming back on, like, fucking Google or something?
Yeah, it was something weird like that. There's all kinds of...
PlayStation Network is showing Powers, which was created by Brian Michael Bendis, creator of Ultimate Spider-Man. That's got, like, Charlton Copley in it. He's like an actual Hollywood guy now.
A lot of people have kind of shit on that because of how... people think they were just copying Microsoft because Microsoft did the Halo show, which ended up kind of sucking. But I'm not the biggest Halo person. I enjoy it, but I don't really get into the mythos as much. But Powers, I think, debuts like first week of March or so.
I'm excited for that, because those of you who have never read the comic, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's Homicide, life on the street, only there's superhero people fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
So, what does a cop do when you've got to arrest someone who could punch a hole through you?
Right.
Type of thing.
So, I think we're both psyched for that.
Yeah.
Of course, Dan does not have a PlayStation device in his house, so...
But I'm pretty sure, thanks to the modern world of the internet, I should be able to find it somewhere. And if not, I'll just buy it when it comes out on Blu-ray, because that's what I do.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll have the original pilot episode that they scrapped that had Jason Patrick in the lead.
I did not know that.
Yes, they filmed a pilot, never got picked up.
So that
FX,
explains...
I think, was working on it for a while.
That explains, then, why when it was announced... It was announced last E3... Mm-hmm. They were actually, it was announced E3 2013 that it was going to be fall/winter 2014. Mm. And then it ended up, it's going to be March 2015. Yeah, so that must be why
it had a troubled history getting made, but I think it's going to be good.
Yeah.
I look forward to it.
So that was mine. How many have I done? I've done, that will be three of mine. So what is next for you?
My number three is The Shield. I mean, you guessed it. I never expected The Shield. Fun story behind The Shield. Myself, my friend Jabron Graham, my friend Chris Beckett, my friend Ben Roberts, all used to gather at my friend Jabron's house to watch Witchblade. Oh yeah. Witchblade starring a drunken Yancey Butler on TNT. It was a god-awful show, but we watched it because we were nerds. We liked it. And then, one night... We had heard that this new show, I don't even know who had originally heard about, this new show was premiering on FX, which at the time was, they showed repeats on from shit, they showed movies Fox owned, basically, and that was essentially
And I think that The Shield, correct me if I'm wrong, is really the first time that a truly great show was on a different network, and not counting HBO.
Yeah, it's one of the higher cable channels.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. We watched this episode of The Shield. I like cop stuff.
Originally called Rampart.
Yes.
Did you know?
Yes, I did. It's actually on the original script because I have... I'm a nerd. I collect scripts.
Because I remember seeing... It was actually... the reason I remember this show so well is because I didn't start watching it right away because it was right before I went to basic training. Mm-hmm. So I had seen all these... it was on... I don't know why I was watching FX so much, but for whatever reason... Oh, I know why, because they were showing The Practice,
which
I love. Mm-hmm. Anyway, every commercial break it seemed, they were pushing this new show, and it was called Rampart. And then when I got back from basic training, I was like, okay, I got to start watching this show. Can't find it. It's been renamed The Shield. Totally fine. And that was also, the other thing about that was Michael Chiklis broke the ice on winning an Emmy.
Yes, he did. Michael Chiklis owned that fucking show.
Yeah.
He was the reason people watched it. I had known him... It might have been my friend Chris, because my friend Chris was a big fan of The Commish, mm-hmm. where he played this doughy, friendly commissioner,
mm-hmm.
and he was just a lovable guy. He was probably one of the first anti-heroes to be the main character on a TV show.
Vic is not a nice man.
He is a... I'm not going to say he's a horrible human being, because I mean, in the very first episode, and this is what knocked me on my ass, the end of the very first episode, he shoots a fellow cop in the head because he was put there to Vic was the leader of a strike team, which was kind of like a mini SWAT team almost. They were, they were guys that played by their own rules type of guys. Only these guys were just... They were there to get rich. Walton Goggins, who has now made a name for himself on Justified.
He's been great on Justified.
He's a phenomenal actor, and he was great as Shane on The Shield. Another character... Oh, shit, I'm not remembering his name. I'm only remembering Ronnie as the other character. Lem,
yeah.
Lem has gone on to be on other stuff as well. He was on Sons of Anarchy for a while. Show with Holly Hunter on TNT.
He also did a guest appearance on something good. I can't remember what it was.
And then this other guy named Ronnie, who's actually, I guess, a friend of the creator, Sean Ryan. Oh. That's how he got the role. That's why he had the least amount of lines, I guess. He was just kind of the guy in the back.
Yeah.
But these four guys were the strike team. They would take down drug dealers, get the stats, they would do the tough stuff, and then they'd probably take the drugs and sell it back to other dealers.
Right, and they were, and that was kind of, until Aceveda comes in, mm-hmm. that was kind of, they overlooked that because they were very...
They got the numbers.
Yeah, they were, you know, they were very effective. Bust. Very effective.
Yeah, they, on other shows, they would be the heroes of the show because they take down the drug kingpins.
Right.
Only on this show, after they take down the drug kingpin,
they half replace, the money disappears.
And they replace him with a drug kingpin they know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So that then they can get a cut of that. I mean, right. I remember one of the episodes where Sticky Fingers of rap group Onyx played a drug dealer. And their big idea was, okay, these two drug dealers are feuding. Let's stick them in a storage box until one of them works it out.
Yeah, it was like a train.
Yeah. They go back the next day and Sticky Fingers killed the other dude.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, okay, guess you're the guy now.
Was his name Trayvon or Train?
Something like
he was a rapper.
It's been a long time since I need to rewatch The Shield again. It's a long time since I've watched it. But I mean, that show was on the, I'm looking over my shoes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That was on the show. That was on the air for 7 years.
Wow. I'm almost positive I haven't seen it to the end then. Yeah. I'm pretty sure
you need
season
to,
5.
Because it's got the. One of the best endings of any shows I've ever seen. It was a perfect ending. The show, to me, couldn't have ended any other way. And it's a way you don't expect.
So maybe I'll have to leave here today with at least season 7.
Yeah, you need to leave here with those two seasons that you haven't watched. But, I mean, and not only was it a great show, full of great actors, I mean, it brought in movie stars.
Yes.
Glenn Close did a season. Forrest Whitaker did about a season and a half, and he was fucking amazing on that. He underwent a physical transformation during that show. I mean, he slowly lost his mind and weight and was just perfect. And that was another thing, big movie stars coming in to do one season of a show.
Right.
That wasn't really heard of.
Right.
And then, I mean, Sean Ryan has gone on to create other shows canceled before their time. Terriers, which I adored.
I did. I liked that.
And The Chicago Code.
Didn't watch that.
He did another show recently. I'm forgetting what it is right now. But then, one of the other main writers on the show who eventually became a producer, Kurt Sutter, who went on to create Sons of Anarchy, mm-hmm. and has just announced his next show, The Bastard Executioner.
Huh.
Which is going to take place in, like, Scottish medieval times.
Oh, so, I'm down for that.
Yeah, I mean, the dude's Shakespearean through and through, all through, you know. Sons of Anarchy is very Shakespearean in how it plays out. Throw him back into, you know, medieval Scotland, and the main character's an executioner? Hell yeah, I'll watch that. So that was my number three, The Shield.
So I'll move on to, I'll do Firefly next. Firefly is, that's another one that is, I think this is the, and the internet will agree with me, the number one case for a show that was, canceled too early.
People get exceptionally angry.
Yeah, still, just bringing it up.
Still.
Again, if you don't know, Firefly was on around 2002. I don't know. Early 2000s. It only had, I think, 13 episodes in a movie. And the movie was a ways down the line after the last episode aired. It never really wrapped up because it was just kind of canceled mid-season. I place 100% of the blame for that on Fox. They fucking buried it on, like, Friday nights at 10 or something. I could be completely wrong about that.
They had no idea what to do with that show.
No, because it is a tough sell. It's a tough sell to say, hey, we got this new show. It's a space western. But in the context of the universe that Whedon created, it makes total sense. And it makes total sense that that's how it would play out if we used up the planet and started to terraform other places. There's absolutely going to be, a central area where the wealthy people are, and then all the poor people are going to get flung out to these outer moons and other planets, and that's how the show kind of goes. So everywhere you go, you know, you're coming and landing with a spaceship, and there's people that are so poor and have no access to technology, and they're riding horses and, you know, hand pump wells and all that type of stuff.
But they have ray guns.
And you know, in the main character, Mal Reynolds, he carries around, you know, a six shooter, just like a, you know, an old Western.
Yeah, the impossibly cool Nathan Fillion.
Yes, yes.
There's no one else in my mind who could have ever pulled off that role now.
No, and I have more to say about him in a moment. But the cool thing about that show is also the bad thing about it, and that is it's kind of set. I've kind of reconciled with the fact that there's only 13-ish episodes because those 13 episodes are perfect. It is perfect the way it is. That show never jumped the shark. That show never got old. Every episode is awesome. Objects in Space is one of the best episodes, along with that Sherlock episode I mentioned. That is one of the best television episodes ever. And if you don't know, that's the one where the bounty hunter early basically gets on board Serenity, mm-hmm. and that whole thing plays out so brilliantly, and I just love that episode. But the interesting thing about this show, and we talked about this last week when we were deciding what to do for a podcast, was that when they made Serenity, the movie that followed, because, you know, the fans were clamoring for some sort of wrap-up. So basically, Joss Whedon made this movie. It's great. But he made sure that there was no way that Fox was ever going to use this property again. And I just see, I've always seen Serenity as Joss Whedon's big fuck you to Fox. Mm-hmm. And again, spoilers. And it's not because of the fact that he killed some people off. It was that he killed off the comic relief. And if you kill off the comic relief...
Yeah, that fangirls across the world were all lamenting the loss of Wash.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest.
It was totally unexpected. You know, you expect if someone dies, you know, it would be, I don't know, anyone but Wash.
Yeah. You could go right now to almost any comic convention and just walk up to people and go, "I am a leaf on the wind." And you will watch people cry. It's Pavlovian almost. You say that line of his right before he got it, and it still hits people. Because you know, Joss Whedon is here to break our hearts and kill our favorite people.
Yeah.
Almost in everything he does.
Although my favorite line is, "I can kill you with my brain."
Mm-hmm.
just as a throwaway line as she's walking out. Anyway, that was... I guess the fourth one that I've mentioned.
Yeah, Firefly for me is, I mean, this is very apropos because this could happen tomorrow. Anytime I am stuck inside for a long period of time, it's often when I'm sick. If I'm sick, homesick for the day from work or school or whatever, I can pop in Firefly. And I could watch 13 episodes in a movie, and that's my day.
Yep.
And I feel better by the end of the day.
Yeah.
We've got, apparently Armageddon is coming again tomorrow. To snow us all in.
Yep.
And now that I'm thinking about it, that might be something that I throw right in again.
Yeah. I watch it about once a year, and I just recently watched through it again. Mm-hmm. Interesting thing, we talked about how awesome Nathan Fillion is. We both love Castle, by the way. That's an awesome show. That's I don't know if it's underrated, because I don't know.
I mean, it's been on for, what, six years now? Seven. So it's getting... ratings, at the very least.
They're in season seven, and it's still strong. It's still a strong show. But anyway, Nathan Fillion, one of the other reasons that I love the guy is that he is the, specifically the character of Mal Reynolds, is the, what am I looking for? The inspiration for Nathan Drake, which is the protagonist in the Uncharted games, which is my favorite game series ever. I mean, the Uncharted 2 and 3 are just phenomenal in what they were able to do and the story that they were able to tell. But this, they're making an Uncharted movie, and I'll just throw this in real quick. I don't want to go down this rabbit hole too much, but they're making an Uncharted movie. They're trying to start filming this year. So, of course, the internet's all over the casting of that as well. And everyone wants Nathan Fillion to do it. Nathan Fillion is 42 years old. It's not... the 30-year-old Nathan Fillion. Nathan Drake is, I think, 28 in the first game. And by the time 4 comes out, he's going to be maybe in his early 40s. But either way, you've got to be. It's got to be a very physical actor, and it's got to be someone who is younger. Now, just because he's 42 doesn't rule him out. It's that he looks 42. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's not a bad thing.
He has what my friend Jess calls man neck. Yeah. Which is why he can't be a Green Lantern anymore.
Right.
Because he has the neck that most of us as we approach middle age start to get.
Yeah.
It's not action hero-y.
Right.
And, you know.
So it's the Donald Glover argument all over again. I mean, yeah, it would have been great to get Donald Glover for Spider-Man when he was 24 years old, but he's not anymore. And it would have been great to get Mal Reynolds as Nathan Drake, but that was 12 years ago. So that's all I have to say on that show. So you must have, what, one or two more?
I have one left to go. And okay. This is the one who anyone who knows me sees this a mile away. My number one show of all time is The Wire. I am one of those people that you will meet at a party, and if we're talking about TV and you say, I've never seen The Wire, I have to go, oh my god, you've never seen The Wire. I will not be that asshole who says, let me spend the next hour talking about The Wire. So instead, I'm going to be that asshole who spends like the next 5 minutes talking about The Wire. For those of you who know nothing of The Wire, shame on you. It is essentially a 5-season exploration of how every social construct we've spent decades building is failing the city of Baltimore. It starts out as just a show about drug dealing. There's the drug dealers, there's the cops who are trying to catch the drug dealers. One of the main drug dealers was played by Idris Elba, who is now known pretty much to everybody as, like, the most handsome black man on the planet. Everyone, and loves it. Idris Elba.
And he is my, and I did not come up with this, so I'm not going to take any of the credit, but when I saw it, I said, yes. He is my and a lot of other people's pick for next James Bond.
He would be amazing.
He would be that dude so good.
Is smooth.
He'd be so good.
A lot of people might know him from he did a guest stint on The Office as Charles.
Yes, yeah.
And there was just one moment where he's like, yes, I'm very aware of my effect on women. And I was like, bam, James Bond, right there.
Well, the thing, you know, people, the only downside of that is that people flipped out over a blonde Bond.
Oh, I know.
What do you think they're going to do if there's a black Bond? But either way, I think he'd be fantastic.
He would be amazing. And he started off for me his track record of just being freaking awesome on this show. He was one half of like a drug dealing duo. Stringer Bell, Avon Barksdale. One was the more street of the two. Avon Barksdale. He was the hustler. He was the one who wasn't afraid to go to war to knock heads. Stringer was more the businessman. He wanted to find... They'd made their money. He wanted to find legit ways to earn more money. Not that he ever got out of the game, because that's where a lot of money came from. But he saw other ways to make money so that they wouldn't end up in jail for the rest of their life. And they were chased after by a special group of cops led by one of my favorite creations in fiction, Detective McNulty, Jimmy McNulty, drunken Irishman McNulty, who couldn't keep his dick in his pants. He was self-destructive, but he was almost always the smartest man in the room. He might have been an asshole, but he was right. And he would let you know it, even if it meant he was going to end up, as they say, riding the boat, being a harbor cop, played by Dominic West to absolute perfection. That first season, I mean, it starts out with, you know, they place a wire on the drug dealers and they try to catch them. And then the bigger the case gets, the more fingers get in the pie. Higher ups, politicians are involved, and you start to see just how sometimes the system doesn't want the right bad guys off the street. They want the easiest to catch bad guys off the street.
Yeah, and that's actually a good trope, I guess, in a lot of shows, is that, you know, the decision to, by law enforcement or whoever, to almost be selective in who they go after.
Yeah.
Either because, oh, he's too big a fish, we'll never catch him, or we're better off with, you know, one guy running the show, the illegal show, instead of having 20.
Yeah. Oh, and one of the big things for them was wiretaps cost money.
Mm.
We are a cash-strapped city. we don't have the budget for this. Let's arrest somebody. Let's show a picture with the drugs on the table with everyone smiling behind it so the people know the streets are safer, even if it doesn't get the big fish.
Mm.
And that was something that consistently happened. Season two then went and just did... It was jarring. It almost made me stop watching for the first episode because they left the inner parts of the city and went to the docks. And you started following some longshoremen around for an episode.
Because that's where they were coming in.
And right? I was just like, at the time, they don't tell you that.
Yeah.
They're just like, you still see some of the drug dealers, but you're like, why am I following along all these stevedores, which was a term I didn't even know at the time. Which, considering I'm from Maine, which has shipping ports, I should probably know that. I don't know if we have stevedores or stevedore unions.
I don't know either, and I actually lived on the coast for 10 years.
But what that season started to really see and explore was how drugs get in to our country. People living on the west side of Baltimore are not, they don't have heroin growing there. They don't have cocoa plants. They're not making the cocaine there. It's coming from somewhere. And Baltimore, like many other larger cities in the late 70s, early 80s, places like them in Pittsburgh, started to lose a lot of money because they just weren't used as much. The shipping ports started to dry up. People started, you know, what once were mighty unions were down to just a few guys doing work.
Right.
And once that happened, they had to start finding other means of income, not always of the legal variety.
Well, you do what you got to do.
You do what you got to do. And the one of the main characters of that season, one of the head dog guys, his name's Frank Sobotka. Much like Michael Chiklis in The Shield, he's doing some pretty illegal shit. But for him, he's doing it to keep his guys employed.
Mm.
These are guys whose grandfathers were stevedores, fathers were stevedores. They want their kids to be stevedores. They're protecting a way of life, and it's not working the way it always had. Fast forward then into season three, you start to see the politics behind everything with the election of Thomas Carchetti, who went on to play Littlefinger in Game of Thrones, which was just great casting on both parts. And what politicians do to get elected. Then into season four, you get, which to me is by far the best season, you get into the school systems. And it's not just because, you know, I went to school to be a teacher. I work with homeless kids now. You just see what all this failure, especially with the school system, has done to our kids and has given them no options. There's a book out now that I'm in the middle of reading called The Long Shadow, where these, I believe they're sociologists from Johns Hopkins, followed a massive amount of kids from first grade almost to their 30th birthday, and they've learned just the effects poverty has on people and the schooling, and you start to see that these kids have no options in life.
Did you ever watch Waiting for Superman?
Yes. And
that is heartbreaking.
And sadly, in Baltimore, there are no magnet schools or charter schools. There's the public schools. I mean, there might be, and I just don't know them. In the world of The Wire, there's the public school, and the public school reminds me of that opening scene in Lean on Me where Welcome to the Jungle plays and people are just getting their ass kicked.
Yeah.
It's a hard, hard life that I could never, ever possibly go through. And you see how kids get involved in the drug trade.
Yeah, it's not hard to believe once you see what the you know, it's easy for us to sit. It's easy for people to sit on a news set and say, you know, well, just stop doing drugs and get a job. It's not that easy.
Yeah. These kids didn't have that option. And the creator of the show, David Simon, he wrote a book. He used to be a writer for the Baltimore Sun Journal, Sun-Times. He wrote a book called Homicide, where he rode around with the homicide department of the Baltimore PD for a full year and just watched what they did, interacted. This went on to become the show Homicide: Life on the Streets.
Good show.
Amazing show. It just barely missed my list. I figured if I got two David Simon shows, you get sycophantic at some point. But I own it. Homicide for me is if I see it in a used bookstore, I buy it.
Yeah.
And then I give it away.
Yeah.
I have a paperback, a trade paperback, a hardcover, and I'll just buy it, give it away, buy it, and give it away whenever I see one because I think people need to read it. He then wrote a book with the other co-creator of The Wire, Edward Burns, who was a former cop that he had met during his time on Homicide, called The Corner, where they basically lived in a street corner neighborhood for a full year. And they saw the family dynamics at play. They saw street families taking over, drugs, poverty. They went at this like sociologists. And you'll always read articles that say this show isn't, there are parts of the show that aren't authentic. It's still fiction.
Yeah, but it's still it still has to be entertainment.
Everything feels real. The show was filmed in Baltimore using Baltimore people. There's a man who plays a deacon on the show. Briefly, he's one of those voices of wisdom to the cops. He's the Morgan Freeman of the show. Dude was the biggest drug dealer in Baltimore in the 70s. Snoop, this young lady on the show who is hard-ass. She's an assassin for one of the main drug dealers on that show. She's got time under her belt. She was from the streets. Everything about this show, to me, rings authentic. And then he wraps it up in season 5 with an exploration of the media and how it's almost biting the hand it feeds him at this point, because it's airing on HBO.
Yeah.
And this show is now pointing at, this is how the media fucks things up. They get stuff wrong. Lies get perpetrated. Fox News fucking happens.
Yeah.
And now people are getting the wrong story and the wrong ideas. And this is how everything just keeps cycling on, because no one is doing it right.
Well, I give HBO a lot of credit for doing things like that anyway. It would have started with The Wire. Right now, I've said this 100 times too, most important show on television right now is John Oliver, Last Week Tonight. I believe that firmly, and that HBO has allowed him to do that, to do what he does, because he skewers anyone where he sees a wrong. I know this has nothing to do with The Wire, but I just give HBO a lot of credit for that, because they don't have advertisers to suck up to.
Yeah, The Wire was never it never won an Emmy, which for me is just shocking.
But and it's always on those lists.
It's on everybody's list. If you ask people I didn't even mention Omar Little, who was an openly gay character on the show, in an urban city, openly gay Robin Hood, who robbed from drug dealers, pretty much just keep for himself. But yeah, the man had a code. And almost everybody, he's one of their favorite characters from the show. And he and Michael K. Williams ended up going on to Boardwalk Empire as Chalky White. He's an astounding actor, but you try to air this on a network, other than the sex and violence, this ain't happening. Because there are so many characters that are just, they would scare network executives.
Yeah.
He's one of them.
And I think that's part of the downfall of networks, is that they are,
they're beholden to advertisers. They really are.
Just advertisers, they're beholden to the FCC, where AMC, FX, all these cable networks that have all of the good shows now aren't so much, because they're not, because the deal with the networks was always, you can use our airwaves, but you have to, I think it's 1 hour of news a day has to be put on, which, that whole thing is so antiquated at this point, because news has become,
it's a 24-hour cycle.
Yeah, and it's a, network news is almost as big a moneymaker as anything else. So what we'll do now, I'll go on to my last one, and this is also a recent one, and it's one that I'm not even caught up on, but it's Game of Thrones. Now, I started reading the books probably while season 1 was airing. I wrapped up the first book shortly before it came out on Blu-ray, season 1, I mean. And I started watching it up to like 7 or 8, where I caught up to in the book. And every time, I'd read it far enough ahead to, catch up to the next episode. And I don't know that there's ever been a book to movie or book to television adaptation that nailed it as well as season 1, especially of Game of Thrones.
It's hard to argue that point. It really is, because it's,
anything that was even remotely important in the first book is in season 1. It ends at the exact right time. Everything in the middle is there. the things that you miss, because the books are huge. If no one, if you're not familiar with the books are enormous. And a lot of it in there is family backgrounds and...
There's histories involved. Yeah.
And there's more character, which leads me to my thing about the show, which is... And we talked about this last week because we've both read the books prior to watching the show. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how anyone does it that has not read the books, because there's so much stuff that you kind of... need to know in the background that kind of enriches the whole thing that you don't get. And they'll even mention stuff that is never explained, but, you know, I know it, or, you know, Dan knows it when he watches it because he read the book. And it was interesting to me because I watched season one with my wife, who had not read the books. So every once in a while she would just pause and just say, okay, what was that all about? And I don't understand how people do that without either reading it or having someone right there that has.
Yeah. The Blu-rays are amazing for this.
Yes.
Because the Blu-rays have those little tiny featurettes that give you entire little animated histories about everything.
Yeah.
Those Blu-rays are some of the best Blu-rays produced out there, with as far as the special features and the quality of everything. Those special features make those box sets for me. They're amazing.
Yeah. I like those a lot, too. I am right now... I think I told you last week about a third of the way through Feast for Crows. And I put it down quite a while ago just because I was kind of burned out. And I knew I was way ahead of the show. But I guess I'm going to have to start picking it up again because I think the show's catching up. But, that rounds out my top five.
I'm going to mention just the casting.
Oh, yeah, show. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I had never really heard of Jason Momoa before this show.
Sure.
I guess he was on Baywatch. Never really watched it. And if you look at pictures of him, he doesn't even look like the same guy.
I wouldn't have known that.
He was Khal Drogo.
Yeah.
He was just immense and frightening. And I was so excited when he got cast as Conan, only to watch that movie make him unbelievably not scary, which I don't know how they pulled off.
Yeah.
That movie was just awful. But you've got Jason Momoa as Khal Drogo. You've got... Peter Dinklage. I don't know if anyone has heard the theme song sung with nothing but the words Peter Dinklage?
No.
It's amazing. You need to Google search that at some point. It just says Peter Dinklage. It's phenomenal. Peter Dinklage is amazing as Tyrion.
Yeah.
He needs to, I know he's been Emmy nominated at least once for that role, but it's a shame that he doesn't get it every year.
Yeah.
Because he is awesome.
Well, and the fun thing about both the books and the show, because this is an example where, you know, they're pretty much one and the same. Mm-hmm. You know, like shows like The Walking Dead kind of go off.
Yeah.
You know, they start off, maybe the first two books are accurate.
Kinda.
And then it just kind of fucking... Yeah. Where they are now is nowhere near.
No. Walking Dead has... They keep a lot of the same stuff, but they go about it different ways. Yeah. And
they've kind of split it. But Thrones stays very... I get, and part of that is George R.R. Martin is pretty heavily involved in how it goes. The interesting thing about the Game of Thrones, and if you're saying it correctly, the Song of Fire and Ice, is that your favorite characters are people that you are not typically shown as characters, especially in a setting, a fantasy setting like that. My favorite character in the entire series, in the books, is an 8-year-old girl.
Arya, hell yeah.
Everyone is aged up in the show because he was being really authentic in that, you know, people were getting married when they were 12 and stuff like that. All the children in the show are aged up, I would say, probably 5 years on average. So Arya is, I think she's probably 12 or so at the beginning of the show. Mm-hmm. She's like 15, 16 now. But in the book, she's 8, and it's badass because, you know, she's killing dudes left and right.
Sticks them with the pointy end.
Yep. I have a coffee mug that says that.
I actually thought about bringing out my we do not sew mug.
Yep. So, and then my other favorite character is, who is originally presented as the villain, is Tyrion. Mm-hmm. And over the course of the books, and of course the show... Tyrion becomes more likable, and you see that he is the only one in that house with a conscience. Mm-hmm.
Which is scary to say.
Yeah. Yeah, and because no one else does. His father's a dick. His sister's a dick. His other brother is a dick that kind of comes around a little bit. His nephew is the biggest dick ever.
Yeah. Joffrey, one of the greatest on-screen villains, because every time that kid is on screen, you just want to punch him.
And you know what sucks for him? He can never do anything else.
Oh, apparently he doesn't want to. He didn't want to act again after that.
Oh, really?
He's apparently not an incredibly nice kid who wants to do charitable work and do all this other shit.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. Everyone would just be, oh, it's Joffrey.
Yeah. He could never do another thing and have people not think of Joffrey. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. We are right now at 1 hour and 40 minutes. What we're going to do is pause, and then there will be a part two. And from there, I do have another sort of, we're going to do, Dan's going to talk about some comics. I'm going to talk about a couple games. I'll start out because I want to talk about the Game of Thrones game, going right into that. And then we'll talk about the two little projects that we're doing. Mm-hmm. So we are going to pause right here, and we'll be right back.